tonight on 360 North at 8, Juno Raconteurs Pat McClear and Tom Cosgrove tell coming out stories of action and reaction. Well Read is next at 9. Immense Possibilities salutes David Suzuki, still on fire at 80, at 9:30. At 10, Natural Heroes Beyond Recognition introduces the first women-led urban indigenous land trust. Built to Last, Green Farming follows at 10:30. Tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
Stay tuned for a Juno Afternoon. Sarah Truitt from the United Way will be here to highlight this year's Community Impact Grant Cycle. We'll learn about the third annual Wishkanyadei Summer Showcase. We'll continue our Summer Fun Series with Holly Johnson from Wings, Airways, and the Taku Lodge. And, of course, Arts Up because it's Thursday. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and more. That's next on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A 4-4 decision by the U.S. Supreme Court allows a civil suit against the Dollar General Corporation to go ahead in the Mississippi Band of Choctaw Indians Tribal Court. Thursday's decision means a lower court ruling in favor of the tribe stands. The decision rejected Dollar General's argument that the tribal court could not be impartial in the case against a non-tribal member. The original suit seeks civil damages against Dollar General, stemming from sexual abuse allegations. The 2005 suit claims a manager of the Dollar General store on Choctaw land abused a 13-year-old boy. President Obama signed the Indian Trust Asset Management Reform Act Wednesday. It establishes an Indian Trust Asset Demonstration Project and other provisions to help tribes manage their own trust assets. National Congress of American Indians President Brian Clattesby praises the move as a step forward in self-determination, saying it allows tribes to have greater control over decision-making. Plans and regulations, when approved by the Interior Secretary, can authorize a tribe to engage in surface leasing, forest management, and appraisals without any further approval by the Secretary. NCAI is planning a special information session on the new law at its mid-year conference next week in Spokane, Washington. The Business Council of the Confederated Tribes of the Colville Reservation in Washington say Chairman, songwriter, and entertainer Jim Boyd will be missed after announcing his death in a press release Wednesday. Reporter Steve Jackson has more.
Jim Boyd was 60 years old. He began writing his own music when he was in his 30s and contributed songs to the soundtrack of the 1998 film Smoke Signals. Boyd says he began playing music at a very early age.
You know, I remember being 4 years old and being this, I was just obsessed with music even then. I remember, and I had these little plastic instruments, and those were my, you know, those were my toys. Nobody could mess with them. My dad was in the Air Force for 20 years, so we would live a couple of years on an Air Force base, a couple of years on the res. We just kind of go back and forth with that. And I remember trying to build my own drum set, like, you know, around fourth grade or something like that, out of cardboard.
In 2014, he received a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Native American Music Awards. He's also been the tribal chairman since 2014. Poet and novelist Sherman Alexie met Boyd, and the men soon began writing music together. Boyd was a member of the Arrow Lakes Band, one of the 12 tribes that make up the Confederated Tribes of the Colville Reservation. Boyd had run for a third term as council chairman in the most recent tribal council election, which was held last Saturday. The votes are still being tallied. I'm Steve Jackson reporting.
The outgoing executive director of the South Dakota High School Activities Association says one of the major accomplishments of his tenure was greater participation by Native Americans. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Wayne Carney has been part of the South Dakota organization overseeing high school athletics since 2001. He was involved in high school sports for many years before that. Carney says when he became executive director, he thought creating a position on the Activities Association board would help to heal any wounds and solve future problems. He says Brian Brewer of Pine Ridge was elected to the first Native American representative position in 2003.
And I'm talking, that's the first Native American rep in over 100 years, right at 100 years. So I just really felt when I came into the office in 2001, there appeared to be, to me, a disconnect between our Native American schools and the rest of our schools. You know, so we established a Native American Advisory Council right away. This is one of the things that I viewed as a necessity when you're looking at, you know, the equal opportunity, the discrimination, whatever you want to call it, that we really needed a Native American rep.
Kearney says in order to put another position on the Activities Association Board, the group's constitution had to be changed. That proposal met with about 80% approval. Kearney's retirement is set for the end of the next school year. I'm Gary Ellen Bolt.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Since 1970, NARC has stood firm for justice in Indian country on critical issues like treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARC. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome to a Juno Afternoon. I'm Lori Scandling in the studio with our producer, Jeff Brown. Glad that you could join us on this sunny day. The weather speaks for itself at the moment. Tonight, it will remain mostly clear, lows 48 to 53. Tomorrow will shift a bit to mostly cloudy and somewhat cooler with a chance of rain. Glad you could join us today. In the studio with me is Sarah Truitt. She is the Resource Development Director from the United Way, and we're going to be talking about this year's Community Impact Grants cycle. So, Sarah, I've heard of Community Impact Grants, but please explain what is a Community Impact Grant and what is the source of funds for those grants?
Community Impact Grant is the result of, in part, the result of the United Way's annual campaign. So when people are filling out pledge forms, making donations to United Way, if they say, we want to donate to one of those key impact areas, which is education, income stability, and health, those donations are compiled, put into buckets, and those buckets of money contribute towards that community impact grant. It's a product, if you will, of those donations.
So depending on which sector the dollars have flowed into, that would determine to some degree, I guess, then the amount of money available to distribute in grants.
Correct.
So which of those buckets, as they're called, I'm picturing buckets of cash out at United Way, which of those buckets, education, income stability, and health was the last one, right?
Yep.
Which of those seems to attract the greatest percentage of overall donations? Do you know?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say that I think that our United Way is well known for the work we've been doing towards education with the Reading Tutors Program through a grant from CORE Alaska. And we've expanded that this year in the school system so that there are tutors tutoring children up until third grade who are struggling with reading. And they're at, oh goodness, Harborview. Now I'm on the spot. Harborview, Gastineau, and Riverbend Elementary
School. So half of our elementary schools.
And so I would say that people tend to attribute education, but I think all three do well. We don't really have like a race or anything like that,
sure,
or a cap.
Sure.
So.
What is the size of these grants?
This year, the total pool is $15,000, and we are awarding grants $1,500 to $2,500.
Now, when you say $15,000, is that in all three areas total or in each of those areas?
That is all the grant money that has been all the donation money that has been allocated to this grant cycle.
How many cycles a year do you have? Is it quarterly?
We do this one. We do this once a year. This is annual.
So a total of $15,000, mm-hmm, and the size of each of those individual grants, you said the maximum would be $1,500.
$2,500.
Mm-hmm. What is the process for seeking those funds, and what types of organizations would qualify to be an applicant?
So you would want to be a 501c3 nonprofit operating in the health and human services capacity. You would want to be physically present and providing services in Southeast Alaska. And
so it's not just Juneau.
No. United Way of Southeast Alaska is Southeast Alaska, Yakutat to Ketchikan, and we have partner agencies throughout the region, and last year we awarded grants as well throughout the region. So there was a grant for helping with reading in Craig Public Library, Thorne Bay Public Library. There was a employment program being put together. We awarded grants there. Ketchikan received a grant for Ketchikan Youth Initiatives. They have a paintball course, and they received a grant as well. Sitka agencies have received grants in the past, in particular Sitkins Against Family Violence, as well as other locations in Juneau.
So they need to be an established nonprofit mm-hmm. that is already serving the public.
Yeah.
Give us an example of how complicated it is to fill out the grant, meaning will it take an agency a long time? Many of these nonprofits are pretty small and have limited staff.
Yeah, this is not a complicated process. The grants are fairly simple. You could go onto our website, www.unitedway.org, as in Southeast Alaska, and there's a big bright orange ribbon across the top. One of the tabs says partners, and if you hover over it, you'll see a drop down, 2016 Community Impact Grant. It's very simple to download. There's a budget worksheet and an explanation of instructions. It doesn't take long at all. I've had people submit them the same day that they download it, and send it to me.
I'm wondering, do they need a lot of backup information that they should be prepared to have on hand to collect to submit with the application?
I guess it's hard for me to say what someone would interpret as a lot of background information. I would say that what we're looking for is what's the desired outcome, what's the role that this money is going to be used towards, and what is the budget for the full program.
When you talk about what is the desired income, how does United Way determine whether or not past community impact grants have, in fact, reached their desired income?
A desired outcome?
Outcome.
We have a review committee that selects which grants are going to be awarded and which ones will be denied. The ones that are awarded, they agree to provide us with a report. In this year, in September, explaining exactly how did their program use the funds and what outcomes came from that. And so we don't have standardized outcomes every grant has to measure up to, because if you're implementing something for children and you want to measure, well, this is how many children we served versus, you know, this is how many hours was spent children playing in Ketchikan, not engaged in negative activities, you're measuring two very different things. So we do not have a standardized measures, but we want to look at that report and see how did you actually use the money and what positive outcomes are you reporting.
So it's individualized based on whatever the application supposes it will achieve.
Yeah, I mean, when you consider that we are targeting three different areas, education is a little different from income, a little different from health, so they're not necessarily across-the-board standard results that we're looking for.
How does the grant review committee evaluate the applications? What are the kinds of things that you're looking for as you take a look at the submissions?
Well, you know, I myself don't serve on that committee, but what they're looking for is relevance to how the proposed project fits the impact areas United Way is promoting, education, income, and health. They're looking to see how the program will be implemented, how effective does it seem to be? Is it providing a service that maybe is unique and hasn't been provided before? Having said that, we don't discourage from applying for something that you've done in the past. It doesn't always have to be new and innovative, but certainly innovative is good. You know, we like to see less duplicity of services and more, shall we say, well, Innovative.
Sure. Yeah. What is the deadline for submissions?
The 30th, the end of this month.
Oh, that's...
It's soon.
Yes.
Yes.
I think in 1 week, actually, from today.
1 week.
Now, if people need help with the application, are you available to guide them, or is that not appropriate?
No, I do not guide them through the application. It wouldn't be appropriate. I do receive phone calls, but that walks a fine line between me explaining to you basically what to say to get an award, grant awarded, and walking the line then to not give you too much information. And I personally, once I say no once, I say no to everybody, because that's just, to me, that's the most fair.
The level playing field.
Yeah.
And typically each year, how many of the community impact grants are there out of that $15,000 total?
Oh, gosh. Last year, I think there were, and don't quote me, I think there were 12 to 15 were awarded. I can't say how many will be awarded this year. I'm not sure. It's a hard question to answer.
But it's within that total amount.
Yes, and I wasn't here the year prior, so I can't compare that from memory as to how many grants were awarded last year versus the year before to say whether or they went up or down. But I think we try to spread that money out as far as we can. It's hard for me to give you a good answer as to exactly how many we're looking to award.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sarah, explain again how these funds are provided. I understand the process of United Way, where people give typically through the workplace,
mm-hmm.
and that the impact areas, although there are three broad ones, under each of those there are many, many, many agencies.
Mm-hmm.
How are the impact dollars separate or different from the dollars that flow into the various agencies that might be checked off on a donor's worksheet?
It's truly a matter of how a donor wishes to designate their funding. Our pledge forms do give the option to donate to one of those impact areas, to United Way in general, or you can choose a specific nonprofit partner.
I see. So you have three options as mm-hmm. the donor. What is the donor rate in Juneau? Do you know?
I don't know. I don't have that information.
Having been part of United Way campaigns in the past, I've always been interested. We have a public workforce here that's pretty good size, and I'm just curious, you know, what is, can Juneau brag on it at all about their percentage of donors?
Juneau can certainly brag when it comes to, and I don't think this is a shock to anyone, when it comes to the level of philanthropy and the level of giving that people show across the board in this community is striking. In a good way. How that compares from United Way, how that compares to the general tone of giving, I really couldn't say. I can say that United Way is very lucky to be one of those agencies in town that has the support of the community. We have the support of many individual donors as well as various workplaces, like you said. I think you're referring to CBJ.
Well, we have a large public workforce if we look at state, local, and federal.
Yep. The state of Alaska employees, they participate in what's called the SHARE campaign. And the federal employees living in Alaska participate in what's known as the CFC, Combined Federal Campaign. And we are obviously not the only recipients from those campaigns, but regardless of whether people are working locally, a statewide company, or a local workplace right here in Juneau, they are all extremely welcoming and open and supportive. And, I don't have percentages and numbers, but I can certainly say that, you know, we are very fortunate.
Well, you have lots of positive adjectives, and that was helpful. Thank you, Sarah. We're talking with Sarah Truitt. She is the Resource Development Director of United Way Southeast Alaska, and we're talking about the cycle this year, right now, of the Community Impact Grants, and the application period is open for one more week until next Thursday, June 30th, to apply for these grants. which can be no greater than $2,500 mm-hmm. per organization, but certainly much smaller as well. And they need to target areas that speak to the three big impact areas that United Way Southeast Alaska serves, and those are health, income stability, and education. And the grants aren't just for Juneau. They're for communities throughout Southeast Alaska. So not surprisingly, the website is UnitedWaySeak.org.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Sarah. Do you have a phone number folks can give you a call if they do have further questions?
463-5530, and I would be happy to hand email you your very own application.
A hand email?
A hand email.
I think that's a new term. Thank you so much, Sarah. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 23rd of June, 2016. It was on this day in 1926 that 8,000 college applicants in about 350 locations around the country were given an experimental college admissions test. Carl Brigham, professor of psychology at Princeton, was the one who came up with it. He'd been involved in World War I in the Army's IQ testing program, and he was looking for a test that would measure pure intelligence regardless of the test taker's educational background. It was the forerunner of what we know as the SAT, the Scholastic Aptitude Test, which was formally adopted in 1942. It was on this day, 1868, that the typewriter was patented by a newspaper man in Milwaukee named Christopher Latham Sholes. The QWERTY keyboard evolved over time. Originally, Mr. Sholes had the letters in alphabetical order, but then some letters that were often used together in words ended up with their bars close together, and so the QWERTY keyboard evolved as a way of separating them. It's the birthday of David Levitt, born in Pittsburgh, 1961. Grew up in Palo Alto, the son of intellectuals. He said, "I grew up being the only child in the room whose presence everyone forgot about. By the time I was 20, therefore, I had absorbed an enormous amount, but I had experienced almost nothing." He went off to Yale. He studied writing and published a story in The New Yorker in 1982 called Territory, the first story the magazine had ever published that was clearly about homosexual life. Levitt, considered the first modern fiction writer to bring gay themes into mainstream literature. And it's the birthday of the novelist Michael Schara, born in Jersey City, 1928. His great-grandfather had been wounded in the Battle of Gettysburg, and Schara spent years researching and writing a book about it, The Killer Angels. It came out in 1974. It got mixed reviews. It sold poorly. But after it was awarded the Pulitzer Prize in 1975, and after a movie was made based on it, the novel became a bestseller. Here's a poem for today by Ronald Wallace, String Theory. I have to believe a Beethoven string quartet is not unlike the elliptical music of gossip, one violin excited to pass its small story along to the next violin and the next, until finally come full circle, the whole conversation is changed. And I have to believe such music is at work at the deep heart of things, that under the protons and electrons, behind the bosons and quarks, with their bonds and strange attractors, these strings, these tiny vibrations, abuzz with their big ideas, are filling the universe with gossip, the unsung art of small talk, that not unlike busybody Beethoven, keeps us forever together, even when everything's flying apart. A poem by Ronald Wallace, String Theory, from For Dear Life, published by University of Pittsburgh Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry. More at poetryfoundation.org. And by LegalZoom, supporting small businesses with formations, corporate filings, and independent contract and tax advice. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Calling all who run, walk, or wheel to join KTOO for Only Fools Run at Midnight on June 25th. This year's proceeds will benefit public media in Juneau. Start planning your costume or your team theme to compete for prizes at 11 p.m. at Centennial Hall. T-shirts for the first 550 to pre-register, and registration is available now at the Nugget Alaskan Outfitter, the Alaska Club, Habit Health and Fitness, or online at ktoo.org.
And welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. We're with Connor Lindrum. He is the secretary of the board of directors of the Wishkanadei, which is a spoken word
society.
Yeah. There you go. Connor, please tell me what Wishkanadei means.
Wishkanadei is a Tlingit phrase that means parallel paths or parallel trails. And we chose it after many, many community submissions because we love the idea of the fact that if you're going through the woods and you see people out on their own journeys, out on their own trails, they have their own fallen trees to scramble over. They have their own, you know, sunlight to be in. Everyone has their own ups and downs, but we can see other people on their own paths, and we can respect it, and we can observe it, and we can witness it, and while also being on our own. We're all going somewhere.
So specifically, Wishkanadei will be hosting its summer showcase this Saturday. It is the third annual of that.
Correct.
So that Saturday night, doors open at 6:30 at the Rockwell Ballroom.
Correct.
I assume upstairs. But talk about what folks should expect. I had attended one of the spoken word sessions after we talked last year, actually, and it was a free open session where people just showed up with whatever it is they wanted to share on the spot. But that's not what this is about. So why don't you tell us what the showcase will feature?
Yeah, absolutely. What you're describing was a slam we did last year. So we do slams, we do open mics, and we do writing workshops, and they're either free or very, very cheap. And in order to do those events every single month, in order to help keep fostering a community of artists and people who want to listen to and support artists, we do have one big fundraiser every year, and that is our showcase. What we do is we hand select some of the strongest voices in our community, poets that we really respect, their messages and their craft, and we ask them to write pieces for the show and rehearse them and memorize them. And it's a very polished show. So unlike other ones where people may independently do a lot of rehearsal or just show up and write it in the audience before they go up and then compete there, this is not a competition. This is a showcase of some of the finest that Juno has to offer, and it's set to original music by Jacob Picard, who is just an incredible musical talent, and we're really lucky to have him.
Love that you call them the Whoosh House Band.
Yeah, Jacob Picard, the Wishkanadei House Band.
Can you tell us who some of the performers will be?
Absolutely. We've got Guy Ziggy Unzicker, and we've got Mike Christensen. We've got DJ Derego, Ryan Carrillo, also known by his hip-hop handle, Vainglorious. He was just in New York City representing Alaska at a big nationwide competition. And then also we have the incredible, the famous Christy Nami Erickson, who is also the president of our board and is just a titanic talent.
How long do you expect the show to last? What should folks plan on?
Hour and a half to 2 hours. Each performer gets about 15 minutes plus, you know, in between time. I'd say hour and a half to 2 hours.
Have you discovered in the monthly opportunities that Wishkanadei has offered, have you discovered some up-and-coming talent who will be part of this show? Have they been pulled from the ranks of novices?
Well, a good example would be DJ Derego. He's been involved in the community for a long time, and he's been on the board for the last 3-4 years, about. He's been on longer than I have. I've only been on the board for 2 years. And he is probably my personal favorite poet, period. he's incredible, and watching him grow over the years and become more and more involved in the community, and watching him invest in his own craft, his own artwork as what it means to him, while also donating so much of his time and effort to the board, to the community in general, helping host events, helping mentor younger poets and keep them involved in the community and keeping them encouraged. I would say he absolutely counts. And all of our performers have performed at one point or another in Woosh events for sure. And several of them have been on the board or are currently on the board. And but probably the newest performer in our current lineup would be Ryan Carrillo, Vainglorious. He's only come onto our radar in the last year or so after he moved back to Juneau. He's from Juneau.
I was going to say he is a Juneau person.
He is, mm-hmm. But he was away deployed, and then he moved back to Juneau, and he's been putting a lot of work himself in the hip-hop community here, but he's also been participating in spoken word and becoming more and more involved, and he's a really valuable asset, but he's also going to be our newest, freshest voice on the lineup.
Connor, what defines something as poetry?
You say it is. I think that's kind of the bottom line. If it feels like poetry to you, I mean, you can talk about anything being poetry. You can be really strict if you want to. You can talk about meter. You can talk about scansion. You can talk about rhyme schemes. You can talk about being written. But I think it's more about a purity of expression, which isn't really limited to any one thing. But we, as a group, are focused mostly on spoken word. Yep. But we also, like, recognize other, like, incredible, like, forms of art. So that's why we have our open mics. Like, right now our format is one month we do an open mic, the next month we do a slam, then the next month we do a writing workshop. And so we appreciate and love all forms of art, but we are mostly focused on spoken word. But we have room for it all.
So what's the difference between the slam and the open mic? Is the slam a competitive event?
Exactly. Slams are competitive events with three rounds, and it has to be original work. There are time limits. There are points that are determined by audience judges that are picked the night of. Whereas an open mic, it doesn't have to be poetry. It doesn't have to be original work. You can come and, you know, if you can figure out how to do a bake a pie in 5 minutes and, like, show us how good it is. Like, you can do whatever you want. You could sew a dress in 5 minutes and, like, be like, look at this dress I made. And it's an open mic. You can do what you like. And because having an artistic community and trying to exclude other artists is a bad idea, that's just, like, not what Woosh is about. We're about all art and all art forms and supporting all artistic communities. And but our particular focus and passion is definitely spoken word.
When you have the writing workshop, is mm-hmm. that focused on poetry, meaning coaching folks who feel like they have a voice but aren't quite sure how to get it on paper?
It's customizable to your own experience, so you can come with stuff you're already workshopping yourself and you need someone else's perspective, or you can be a total novice and just be interested in it. But we do focus more, because this is like what we focus on as a spoken word group, is writing something to be performed, writing something for performance, and also we give performance tips and things like that. So all of those get folded into a workshop, both like writing and also how to prepare that for performance. Although if that's not something you're interested in, you don't have to do that, obviously. We want you to come and get whatever you need to get out of that experience.
You know, I think poetry perhaps has been in the headlines a slight bit more because of the passing of Muhammad Ali.
Mm.
And I heard some of his poetry read on the radio last week. And although one might consider it kind of elemental or simple, it really struck me that he was blazing a path both in hip-hop lyrics and the spoken word that has since become so popular as a form of expression. And I'm wondering if you're seeing a growth in the interest of the spoken word as just that, an avenue to create a message, deliver a message. If you're experiencing that here in Juneau, in the 3 years that Woosh Kanati has been operating,
it's very specific to the poet. There are many artists and poets, this is also true, where they are motivated by trying to communicate a particular message, whether it's political, whether it's social, is tied to a bigger philosophy. And then you have poets that focus on very personal work, that are about, like, their own experiences and wanting to share that, wanting to bring up that emotional evocation within us all. And so you have artists that are very much like, I am concerned about the way that the world is treating this group of people. Or you have artists who are like, I am heartbroken and I need you to hear it.
I'm suffering.
Yeah.
How do you write? I assume that you are, this is core to you, or you wouldn't be involved. What is your motivation, Connor?
My motivation is that I love this city. I love Juneau. It's my home. That's where I'm from. And this community of writers took me in as soon as I came back from school. And they're all wonderful people. And I do write, but I'm a prose writer. And so I do write. I mean, I do read at some events, but mostly I host and facilitate other artists lately as of my thing. Because mine is not as much of a recitation format. Although I do have some stuff that I have like to read, very, very short format, sort of micro mini stories. But you won't be hearing any of that at the showcase this Saturday. This Saturday is going to be all incredible poetry the whole time with just fantastic music going along with it.
And what is the cost for the tickets, and can they be purchased in advance?
Yes, absolutely. We would love it if you bought them in advance. They're $25 a piece. You can buy them at the Jack. You can buy them at Hearthside.
Can you get them online?
You can get them online.
Through the Jack? Okay.
You can get them online through the Jack, absolutely. We also have a Bitly set up for it, bit.ly/whooshshowcase. And that's all just one address. And so you can definitely get them ahead of time, but we'll also be selling them at the door. It's going to be an incredible show. I genuinely think that it's going to be possibly the best show Whoosh has ever put on, because a big thing that we learned from last year is we gave a much bigger window for rehearsals. So our artists have been rehearsing for at least a month, over a month. They've been rehearsing with Jacob. Every couple of days he'll meet with two artists at a time, and they will go over their sets and they'll work on their poetry, and he will custom make these songs that he's going to be playing along with them as accompaniment, like they're a heart and soul tied to that specific poem and that specific artist's message.
It's exciting to think that so much local talent will be coming together at the third annual Whoosh. Okay, I'm going to get it. I know I'm going to get it.
Whoosh Kanadei. Yeah, Whoosh Kanadei.
Whoosh Kanadei. Summer Showcase, which is this Saturday night. Doors open at 6:30 at the Rockwell Ballroom, and the program begins at 7. And as Connor said, it will be a polished program. This is not a slam, and it's not a competition, and it's not a open mic. It really is a curated lineup, shall we say.
Exactly. Curated is the word I use a lot, yeah. And it's also a very important event, because we do these free events every month. But in order to do that, we do need like some money. And like while some people do donate throughout the year, like this big fundraiser is what allows us to stay running, stay functioning, stay as an avenue to support people who might not otherwise have a place to express themselves through this art form that they and we love.
Tickets are $25. You can get them online at the Jack, and they will be available at the door. Connor, thanks for bringing your enthusiasm in this room. I can feel it.
I'm so glad. I'm so excited. Thank you so much for having me.
Glad to see you.
This is Bird Note. This brisk whistle belongs to a bird named for its song, the Eastern Phoebe. It repeats its name each time it sings, so it's a pretty straightforward voice to identify and remember. The Eastern Phoebe is one of the most familiar flycatchers east of the Rockies. They often nest very close to people, under the eaves in barns or under bridges. They're one of the very earliest migrants to return north in spring, and they sing a lot. But there's another flycatcher that whistles its name over and over. It's the Eastern Wood Peewee, or just Peewee for short. Common in leafy forests east of the Rockies. This one's more often heard than seen, and it wouldn't be unusual to hear a peewee and a phoebe at the same spot. With careful listening, though, you can tell them apart by their different singing styles. The phoebe's a little more energetic. The peewee's a bit more plaintive. You can share this show with a friend when you come to birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
Will computers become conscious? Can string theory help us travel to the stars? Join us, Seth Shostak and
Molly Bentley and
KTOO News, Friday nights at 8 for Big Picture Science.
Big Picture Science gives you a weekly look into the latest developments in science and technology, straight from the people perched on the precarious cutting edge.
So think big, broaden your horizons, and get the scoop with Big Picture Science.
Friday nights at 8 o'clock on KTOO News, Juneau. Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. Lori Scandling here with our producer, Jeff Brown, and we're welcoming to the studio Holly Johnson. She is the president of Wings Airways Taku Lodge.
Yeah.
And, Holly, we were chatting a few minutes before the program about what is Wings Airways. I think of Wings of Alaska, and there may be some confusion around that. Why don't you explain what Wings Airways is?
Okay, that's a perfect question. Very fair. It's kind of exciting, actually. Wings of Alaska was started here in the 80s, and it was a commuter service and a tour company. And in 2002, 15 of us, 15 longtime employees, had the chance to buy the tour side of the business. So we bought the Flowplane business that's downtown, and we partner exclusively with Taku Lodge, and I consider it more of a family than a business, but we're exclusive to each other, and I get to run the program and represent this great product that's downtown. So Wings Airways, similar name, totally different company.
But thank you for helping me understand that you're doing the tour side. Now, does Wings Airways have some lease agreement on Taku Lodge, or is it a cooperating agreement?
So it's the family that owns the Taku Lodge is the Ward family. They're a longtime Juneau family, and their children are running the lodge now. And we operate the whole program and partner with them exclusively. So we just have a contract with each other and run it like a family business.
And what are the various opportunities that are offered through Wings Airways? It's not just the lodge, is it? Aren't there a variety of choices there?
Yeah, we specialize in glacier flight, seeing off the downtown waterfront with historical aircraft and show the world the Juneau ice field that's just behind the mountains here. So we do glacier flight seeing on all of our tours. Our specialty is the combination tour out to the Taku Lodge that everyone knows about. And then we have the shorter version of just the flight seeing without the stop at the lodge. So we kind of stick to the thing that we've always done, and that's showing people the Taku River region and spreading the history to the world.
My husband took the airplane flight that went over the glaciers. They did not go down to the lodge, but he said, you know, he's lived here 35 years, and he said, it blew my mind.
Yeah.
And it's not that we haven't seen the ice field, but he said it was such a beautiful, beautiful tour.
Oh, that's so great. It's amazing what's right out there. It's in our own backyard,
right?
And we always encourage
just around the corner, literally.
Local rates for everyone because we do want people to come out. And I had a great woman from town come in just this morning, and she said it's been 32 years that she's lived here and never seen anything past the Mendenhall Glacier. So we love that.
I've had
really
the opportunity to fly down to the lodge itself, and that is such a beautiful setting and such a historic site. Talk a little bit about the history of the Taku Lodge.
Okay, I love talking about the lodge. It was built in 1923. It was a doctor who had moved here from California for the gold rush, and he built a hunting and trapping lodge for himself and his friends. And as it expanded over the years, he had visitors that would actually come by yacht or ship up the Taku River back when it wasn't as shallow as it is today. And so it was just shared with a small portion of the world. And one day, one of those yachts stopped in and spent the night. And the next day, the woman from Michigan owned the Taku Lodge. So the character that really put our lodge on the map of Alaska was Mary Joyce. She was a nurse up there, and she raised cows. She had cattle. She had one cow that she'd bring into town to mate and then take back up and have the cattle there, and then sled dogs, and she is so famous. We think that we're tough Alaska women and love our wool and our all our gear. She was invited to an ice carnival in Fairbanks, and so she thought on her very own in December she would make the trip with five of her sled dogs to Fairbanks. Not in a jet airplane. Not with a radio. Not with
using
the
dogs as the transportation.
Yeah, and she did it. So that is really why the lodge is on the National Registry of Historic Places, and we cherish her every day and tell her story.
It really is amazing that one could mush overland from here up into the interior. How long did it take her? Are you familiar with that journey?
Yeah, it took her 3 months. She had 52 actual days of traveling and averaged about 20 miles a day. This is December when there's very little daylight, harsh conditions. They say that some of the jets that would fly overhead would try to look and spot her on her route so that they could spread the word, and native communities helped her along the way. But really remarkable that anyone could do it today, let alone then.
What year was this?
She did this back in the 1950s.
So that was, you know, half century ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, how long did Mary live at the lodge? Was she a resident for many years as well?
Yeah, she was. She had the lodge year-round. And in 1934, the gentleman that had the lodge passed away. I always said she was there in the 1950s. She did that in 1936, even long ago than the 1950s. So in 1942, she sold the Taku Lodge and moved to town and opened two bars here, is what you do when you're a female pilot and want to come into town. So the Lucky Lady is the bar that she opened and is still here today.
And aptly named for her.
She was definitely the Lucky Lady, yeah.
So what should somebody who takes the tour that includes a visit to the lodge expect? What happens when you get there?
Well, we say, and it sounds cheesy, but really time stands still. You head out and the planes drop you off. For a lot of our guests, I mean, we know what silence is, but a lot of our guests that go out there to hear true wilderness silence, when those planes leave and they're at a location 30 air miles from here, it just calms people in a way that you can't find in today's world. There's no cell service. There's no internet. There's, you know, just a chance to slow down and take in the history and feel a little bit of Alaska on a different level.
Now, are meals still served down at the lodge? Is that part of the package?
Yes. Alaska King Salmon, wild Alaska King Salmon is always the header for our meals, and everything else is made from scratch there on a daily basis, and we followed up with the famous Taku Lodge ginger cookies.
So when I was down there, there was a black bear who seemed to be very much a part of the milieu, shall we say. He
yeah.
was quite comfortable in the setting. Is that something people can expect to see? Certainly you don't
yeah.
want to encourage them, but believe, you know, the smell of barbecued fish is
absolutely
pretty
yeah.
irresistible to Bruins and people
now there's
alike.
Generations of black bears that have grown up there. And this is an area that's heavily surrounded with brown bears. So this is a little bit of a sanctuary. The brown bears don't like the noise of the plains. They don't like the activity of the people. So this has become kind of an area that they can go and pick their berries and have their children and, you know, be protected in a way that's different than other areas on the Taku River. So those bears have grown up and there's a mutual respect, never feeding or interacting other than getting some great pictures and enjoying the antics.
As I recall, there are several glaciers whose terminus perhaps the plural is termini, but the edge of which are visible from the lodge. Describe the
yeah,
setting.
Yeah, so we go past five glaciers. We have the Norris and then the Taku. The Taku is the largest in the entire Juneau ice field, and one of the arms of the Taku is the hole in the wall, which is a long name, but it's right across from the Taku Lodge. So it's glacier view dining and enjoy that. And it's great when we tell the story of the glaciers and the history and movement and whatnot. That glacier in particular could fit the entire New York skyline in the glacier itself, and the glacier would be taller than the highest skyscraper. So it really paints a picture of what these glaciers are. And this is the Taku Glacier is not a receding glacier at this point. So we're going to keep cherishing that one while she's here.
How many employees does Wings Airways have, and how many airplanes does it fly in the summer? And you mentioned historic aircraft. Touch on those.
Yeah, so we love our de Havilland Otters. We've always had the de Havilland fleet as our specialty. We used to have the Beavers, and we have downsized to these aircraft. They hold 10 passengers, and it came out of this great relationship with the city to reduce the sound downtown. So some of the smaller aircraft and the radial engines had a louder impact, and honestly, it's really important to us to be great partners. And so these turbine engines, although they're louder at the dock, you just don't hear them in the air the same way. So we operate five de Havilland Otters. There's anywhere from 50 to 75 employees seasonally, and then the owners and the management team that's here year-round. So it's a, and then there's about 8 people that live at the Taku Lodge over the summer. So that is the residency throughout the summer months. And in fact, Michael, who's the son of the wards, who's now running it, he's building his cabin there and hoping to spend the first year-round epic ward winter up at the Taku
Another
Lodge.
Another generation.
Yeah, and they have their child the there lodge. For the first one. So this is a multi-generation family up there.
Now, for locals who are listening who are thinking, you know, I've never done that, it would be fun to try it. And it is fun. What's the cost for a local person, and how would somebody connect? Do they just go down to the ticket booth there at the dock?
The little office in front of the Merchant's Wharf. Mm-hmm. And we have, it looks like a little cabin. Mm-hmm. We have a locals rate. It's normally $309 and it's $255 for locals. And that's locals. And if you have friends or family coming, you don't have to go with them. You can still offer them that rate to have them experience something. So we encourage everyone to come out and see and experience the Juneau Ice Field and the Taku Lodge.
And is there a way to know how often the planes leave? I imagine it's a bit different every day depending on the cruise ship schedule.
Yeah, it's a little different. We, you know, we do private parties, we do weddings, we do a lot of local activities. So we fly every single day throughout the summer, and it just depends on the day. We can fly anywhere from 1 to 5 times up to the Taku Lodge and multiple times for the glacier flight seeing.
What's your number, Holly? So people
Our
are
number downtown is 586-6275.
We're talking with Holly Johnson. She is the president of Wings Airways, which is the tour portion of Wings flight service, I guess, owned by the employees for the last nearly 15 years. And they have a longstanding agreement with Taku Lodge, and it's what they do in the summertime. They take visitors and locals down to the beautiful Taku Lodge, which is a short glacier view flight away. Holly, thanks for dropping
thanks
by
so
today.
Much.
Glad to
we'll
have
see
you.
See you this summer.
Well, as we do every Thursday afternoon, we get together with our friend Nancy DeCherney from across the street at the Juneau Arts and Humanities Center, and we go over all of the fun and exciting things that there are to do in our community in the next few days. What's at the top of the list, Nancy?
We have a sidewalk.
Well, is it in place now? Because
our sidewalk is and yours is coming, and they're supposed to be done by Thursday.
That's exciting, because there was no driveway when I showed up today, and I had to look for a dip in the curb to get to K2. So.
I think you still have that problem, but it's coming soon. So, well, let's see. We've got all, you know, it's summertime, so things are a little bit down from where they are, but we have a lot of important things this weekend. So, this is the last week for you to see the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's juried art show.
And it was fabulous.
Yeah, so stop in to see that. There's tango dancing out at Suite 907 tonight at 7 p.m. and West Coast swing dancing at 7:30 at the Imperial. So let's just dance. And then speaking of dancing, it's our block party tomorrow. And the weather is supposed to be pretty good. It's belly dancing, and they're going to offer a couple of lessons. So you get to watch the belly dancing and then learn how to do a little belly dancing. And then DJ Manu is coming to do some tunes, so I think they'll be dancing.
Now, will that be inside the deck?
No, it will be on the Pivot Plaza. right out
across
here.
The street in front of the wonderful new facility of our museum and archives that has just opened.
And that's why we're calling it a block party, because it's the whole block, the food trucks and the vendors. We can now have them in our parking lot because that's going to be ready for people to walk back and forth. And so it's just sort of a neighborhood party. So we hope everybody will come out.
What time does that start, Nancy?
Starts at 5:30, ends at 7. But I want to point out also that Friday nights are a real good time to be downtown. There's not a lot of cruise ship action, and there's a lot of stores and restaurants and stuff open and having late hours. So make it an evening. What the heck? You know, it's long twilight still. So
absolutely. We're on the solstice time now.
Yeah, and speaking of that, at 10 p.m. there's Salt After Dark, so you could just keep on going until 10 o'clock. Go to Salt. I don't know what they do.
So they will be open at 10 o'clock Friday night for Salt After Dark.
Till 2 a.m., yeah.
Except it won't quite be dark, but...
Exactly. So maybe by 2, I don't know. So there's a Master Gardener's... The garden tour is on Saturday morning. It's at 9:30, and you can get your tour, your tickets ahead of time. You pick up your maps at the Jack or at Safeway. You can get the tickets at Jack and Hearthside.
How much are they?
I don't remember. $20.
Okay.
Yeah. And the gardens are looking fabulous. Have you
noticed? I was chatting with a master gardener who said the combination of wet and warm this year has been just that right balance where things are happy and flourishing and luscious.
Aromas. This is beautiful. So it's a wonderful, it'd be a great thing to do on Saturday morning. There's a community garage sale also over at Centennial Hall at 9 a.m.
Oh, right.
There is, we're doing our walking tours, and the City Museum is doing walking tours. They have tours on Saturday. On Saturday is also the Wush Canadier Summer Showcase at Rockwell.
I'm just chatting about that. It sounds very interesting and very, they're...
Exciting.
Yeah, they're really working hard on presenting it as a polished presentation of skilled folks in this community.
And we have got some fabulous folks that perform at those things. That's from 7 to 9:30 at the Rockwell.
Doors open at 6:30.
And you can get tickets at Jack or the Hearthside Books. So.
What time is that history walk with the City Museum?
That is at 1:30.
And where do people meet? At the City Museum?
At the City Museum.
Mm-hmm. Is that free?
And they kind of know it's got a charge. I think it's $25.
History walk.
And you walk sort of in, it's not quite as energetic as the public art walk that we do. But it's fun. And they give you all sorts of background that I think it's also a nice tour for, even if you've lived in Juneau for a while, it's a good thing to go and do. Only Fools Run at Midnight. That is at 11:59 on Saturday night. Register here at K2 or go over there at Centennial Hall. And I believe prizes for best costume.
Yes. And when we chatted with some organizers of the event, they suggested if you are so inclined towards a costume, it would be good to show up around 10:15 or 10:30, no later, at Centennial Hall in order for the judges to take a gander at you.
Otherwise it might just go too fast.
And there have been some terrific group costumes. So keep that in mind if you're busy planning your costume right now for Only Fools Run at Midnight. And a certain public media outlet benefits from that this year,
so
for which we're all very grateful.
Let's see. And House of Wickersham has free tours on Sunday at 10 in the morning. And we do our guided the public art walk, which is tailored actually to your energy and whatnot. It could go as long as 2 hours. There's been one that went for 3 hours. It's just, there's an amazing amount of public art in this town. But generally it can go from a half hour to an hour and a half, and it's guided by local artists. And
That's a couple days a week, right?
Yeah, it goes Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and you meet at the kiosk by the library, the Visitor Center kiosk. And
what time should people
get
together?
Oh, just get there by 1 o'clock.
By 1, fine. Okay.
Yeah, and they take you in a variety. You know, if you're more interested in totems, they'll focus on that, or if you're more interested in studios. I think, anyway, it sounds like we need to wind up. No? I just thought I was getting the high sign here. Anyway, there's a Makerspace open shop on Monday if you're interested in learning.
Where is that?
It's out in Lemon Creek area near the brewery.
Have you visited that?
I haven't yet.
I just wonder what is there if you're a maker? Like, is there...
There's tools and stuff.
I just wonder, like, is there a 3D printer?
A sewing
machine?
I suppose there is. And the 3D printer is what I want to play with.
Fun. Makerspace out in Lemon Creek.
And they're looking for board members, too. So watch out when you go there. Let's see. We've got the reading program, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, at 3 to 7 p.m. at the library. There's a 3 o'clock show and a 6 p.m.
Downtown library?
It's the Valley Library.
Oh, Valley. Okay.
Mm-hmm. There's yoga on the beach at 5:30 at Auk Rec on Tuesday, these things are. And let's see. I think that kind of winds it up for the week. So it's a good week. We've got things to do. Oh, we'll see you dancing. I know you want to do belly dancing.
I have a belly. I guess I could dance with it.
Yes.
Well, I'm always amazed at our little town forgets that it's a little town, and there are always way more things to do than one.
It's pretty impressive.
It really is.
We do well in the art department, I have to say.
I think we're seriously a jewel of that, and it's one that I know the community would like to strengthen as a Northwest destination. Jeff is counting back. 6, 5, 4. We're so glad you joined us this afternoon.
And it's to see you.
Yes, out this weekend. Nice tonight, a little bit more cloudy tomorrow.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269A.